Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Race Department podcast. That's right, episode number 8. Again, we are here to pick the meat off a juicy beef fillet, which is the sim racing and motorsport news. So what are we going to cover, I hear you ask? Well, this week it's 90s F1 comes to race room, McLaren and Indy 500, R Factor 2 development news, VW IDR goes fast around the Nordschleife, and then we're over to Automobilista 2. This week, squashed into the RD virtual studio with myself, Paul Glover, are Paul Jeffrey and Davide Nativo. Hello, guys.
Ciao, ragazzi.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are we both?
Fine, fine.
Positively outstanding, mate. Thank you. And
good,
how
good,
are
good.
You?
Good, good, good. I'm sure you've both been enjoying the lovely warm weather of late.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it actually warm in Italy, Davide, now?
Yeah, I was telling Paul 5 minutes ago that I have to keep my window open now in my room because it's impossible to breathe otherwise.
Oh, I envy you your heat. We've got torrential downpours here in the north of England.
Yeah, in the south it's been a little bit. So as the date that we record this is the 4th of June, or the evening of the 4th of June. It's around about 8 o'clock in the UK. Yeah, it's been raining most of the day here, but it's still quite humid, so I could deal with that. But yeah, right. Lovely little weather chat there for the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed that.
It started off
because
an absolute
riot. Because by the time
riot.
You listen to this, it's going to be totally irrelevant. Right. And if you'll listen to this like in a week or two, or maybe next year, hello, the weather was lovely this time of year. Right. Okay. Cracking on. 90s F1 comes to race room. Paul, you did Talk and Drive. Looking good, I've got to say.
Yeah. Awesome content topic. I love 90s era Grand Prix style cars. So really chuffed to see race room bring in that kind of thing. Shame it's not a licensed car. It is obviously, to be clear, a generic open wheel high performance car from the early 1990s. But it sounds beautiful, drives beautiful. And comes in three different flavours too, which is nice. V8, V10, V12, I think.
Yeah, Davide, the noise of those 1990s Formula One cars get your heart pumping, don't they?
Yeah, they are beautiful. I started watching F1 in the mid-90s. So, for example, the Formula V12 that is in Automobilista, it's one of my favourite cars. Because it reminds me of my childhood, and it's almost the same with this new car from Race Room. It's just before my time, let's say, because it's 90 and I was born in 1990, but
man, I feel old when you say things like that. Cheers, Davide. Thanks.
Signing off. See you later.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. And as Paul was saying, it's great that they've included different flavors, the V8, V10, V12. So that, not from just from an audio perspective, but also for people to drive it. It will give a different experience.
And they're a funny thing to drive. Sorry, Paul. They're a funny thing to drive.
I was going to ask a question, but it's okay. Go on, carry on.
Yeah, I'll just say what Davide was saying about driving, it gives you a different experience. You kind of get used to open-wheel downforce cars being like point and squirt. I don't like open-wheel cars in sim racing particularly because there's not much to them. A Formula One-style car, you kind of, as long as you turn in time for the apex, it's all just throttle, brake, steer. There's no fun. But these have got downforce, but it's quite immature downforce. So there's a lot of understeer. They're quite squirrely on the throttle. They need a little bit of manpower to get them round track. And of course, they've got a manual box too. Yeah.
I struggle with these type of cars, and probably because I don't drive them enough. And I'm more of a put your foot down to the floor kind of guy and let the car work it out for me. which doesn't bode well, because like when I've at race departments sometimes, especially like the other day, the Australian guys were doing a club race with Niki Lauda's McLaren you know, obviously, because we unfortunately lost the legend that is Niki Lauda. And so we're doing a tribute race. And I didn't sign up because I know that I can't drive that thing because I don't practice enough with those kind of cars. So
and that's the key, isn't it? It's one of those ones that it's not that style cars, not pick up and play. That's no. The kind of thing you need to work at and really get a good level of experience, I think, before you go.
Well, like you say in your article about it, you know, lots of power, basic aerodynamics, understeer leading to oversteer, and a wailing engine kicking out heavenly noises through the exhaust. You know, and I think you kind of epitomised what these kind of cars are about, because there are other games out there that have very similar cars from the 90s in F1. And like you say, it isn't an official licensed car, but pretty much it's pretty much the same thing. You just can't make it look like it. But,
yeah, exactly.
It looks good, got though, and it looks like it's got quite a few skins to go with it, Paul.
Yeah, and the sweet-looking ones as well. So a lot of the liveries, obviously they're not official Grand Prix teams.
Yes.
But they've been, some of them are fantasy, but they're quite nicely done. And some of them have been taken from the various different hill climb cars from around the world. So like a lot of this type of Formula One car or Formula 3000 cars and stuff get converted for hill climb racing, especially in like France and Sweden and that sort of thing. So a lot of the liveries have been lifted from there as inspiration. So they're grounded in some level of reality. It's just not quite in the same universe as 1990-1991 Formula One. So I think I don't like fantasy liveries. I don't like fantasy anything, to be honest. But they do a really good job, in my opinion, with these. They're really quite believable. So I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the liveries, definitely.
You can never go wrong with the Raystrom skins.
Yeah, they do a good job. It's one of their many strong points, I think.
Yeah.
And it needs it. It adds an I like a grid. If I've got, let's say, I don't know, 28 cars on the grid, I like the world to be unique, so I'm not racing the same car 15 times.
Yeah.
They do a damn good job
at that. That is a problem in multiple games, isn't it? Unless people make custom skins, which I recently discovered for R-Factor 2, the amount of skins that are made for some of the cars. So,
You need a degree, though, to work out how to install them. That's the only thing.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I was having that discussion with Joseph about some skins that he recently made. Yeah, not very user-friendly, that's for sure. But I'll be honest, probably not a car that I'm going to buy it because I know that I won't be able to drive it until I practice with very similar other cars in other games. But really good to see that they bought this content out. I was really, really happy when I saw this because I thought this is going to really appeal to some of the hardcore sim racers out there. So.
And I think that's the key. It's Raceroom are doing a really good job of getting as broad a variety of content as they can into sim. So for me, it's the same. I've done my little video and everything, and I'm very, very, very unlikely that I'll spend any more time in it because it's just not my bag. But it is for some people, and it's awesome to see that we've got some more historic content, and it's in that kind of world of Formula One style stuff. So it just, again, broadens the... I like to pick a game up that's not a single series type game, that's got a bit of everything in it for me. So now with Raceroom, I can do a touring car or a top level GT or a prototype, Formula cars from the bottom to the top of the class, old stuff, new stuff. It's coming on really nicely in the content.
Yeah, the content is really is growing nicely, isn't it? Yeah.
Bit hit and miss sometimes with the quality, I think. I think the older stuff's starting to show its age in comparison to the newer stuff because, for me, physics-wise and 3D models, they've moved on quite a lot in the last, I don't know, 12, 18 months.
That must be hard, though, keeping up your catalogue, though, when you're, like, you've got, like, you know, you're up, like you say, the physics and everything's moving on. You've got to go back, haven't you, and kind of...
Oh, God, yeah.
...kind of give the older versions a bit of a firmer upgrade, I guess, in, you know...
And it's not a copy and paste job. It's not just put some new values in, push it live. You've got to do the BOP testing, you've got to have the beta testers on the case. I've had a look behind the curtain in how these things work with Raceroom, and it's mind-boggling the amount of time, effort and work that goes into what apparently seems like a simple upgrade. I mean, the WTCR 2019 season's not a million miles away from coming out. And they've only added one car. So you'd think, oh, yeah, just put one car in, change the bop so that one car fits and you're done. But they've revisited the physics. They've got some new data and stuff. And then they've tried to balance the grid. And just for what seems like a real simple thing to put some new liveries on, add an extra model in. oh my goodness, the amount of work and energy and the number of people doing 1,000 laps with each car to try and level them out, and then a physics change tweaks, and you need to do another 1,000 laps. Big credit to all those that are involved in the non-paid beta testers.
Yeah, definitely.
Mind-bending, man.
Definitely. Right. So that's F1 90s car now in race room, nicely covered. Brilliant. Next topic. So recently, Fernando Alonso, ex-Formula 1 driver for most recently McLaren, still has a contract with McLaren of sorts, attempted to enter the Indy 500 again, and boy, did it go wrong. Turns out that they had to go and buy some bits because they realised that their bits weren't good enough. They made a real hash of it. And I think it kind of highlights how, you know, it's not just you could just turn up and do this thing. Unfortunately for Alonso, he had to do the final shootout qualifying the day after the initial qualifying session. And I was watching it live, and he was pretty slow in comparison to the guys the day before. So a bit embarrassing for McLaren. They've come out and kind of held their hands up. But also today, as we record, Paul and David Day, there was an announcement from Alonso to no to the full 2020 IndyCar season. It does seem a bit weird how he wants to rock up at IndyCar 500 and go, I'm the big I am, and then go off again. I don't know if that's disrespectful or not, but David Day, what are your thoughts on the IndyCar 500 attempt this year?
I think that surely McLaren has underestimated the kind of effort they should have put in this kind of operation. These are very different cars using, more or less similar technology, but adapted and fitted for a very different situation. So you can't just build a car overnight and then hope it will be first on the grid. Alonso is a professional, so he understood that what went wrong. And in fact, he said in his latest press conference that you won't try a full season because you have to have the right level of commitment, and that's the key. About as you were saying, he's trying to win the Indy 500, and he's showing up just for that event. But I don't think it's necessarily disrespectful. I mean, he's made it very clear that he wants the Triple Crown to achieve that goal. And after all, other great drivers in the past have done the same. Like, for example, Jim Clark. He raced in F1 and he would show up in the USA just for the Indy 500. And so other drivers. I think that the right way to see it, it's commendable. I think it's the right word. It's something to be proud of, that a foreign driver is actually showing up for the race. So he's showing respect to that specific race. He's showing that it has importance. He wants to be part of it. He wants to win it. So I think that it's something good.
Yeah. Okay. So Paul, after the Indy 500 failure, what's his name? Brown. Is it Brown? Isn't it Zach Brown? Sorry. What's his name? What am I on about? Zach Brown came out and basically said, the preparation, it started. We didn't even have a steering wheel. It was like the basics just seemed to go wrong. And since he came out and talked about that, Bob Fernley, who used to be the Force India deputy team principal, was brought on towards the latter parts of 2018 to run the McLaren's kind of IndyCar project. And he's now gone after this. So he's no longer around. So that's one head that's been chopped. I mean, you know, fundamentally, if you're going to race a car, you've got to have a steering wheel, you've got to have your basics, you've got to, you can't, I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is, if it's just, they just thought that it was going to be easy or what?
The whole thing was an absolute mess right from the beginning. I mean, that Bob Fernley, outstanding in Formula One. So what do? Sign him up to head your IndyCar outfit up. Then you strengthen your Formula One team by signing IndyCar driver Gilles de Ferran. Surely you do it the other way around. Get de Ferran, who knows what he's talking about, to do IndyCar, and Fernley in for Formula One.
Maybe someone got the contracts missed up.
Do you know what? McLaren nowadays, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Just the whole Indy 500 performance was a joke. As you say, they turned up to Phoenix. I think Phoenix, was it, or Texas, I can't remember, to do a test a month before the race. Didn't have a steering wheel. So Zak Brown had to borrow one from Ford to get the car on track. Then the car that Carlin prepared for him, wrong colour orange. So that's fine. Sent it back to get it resprayed, but Carlin didn't turn it around until Alonso crashed his car on Wednesday at Indy. So they needed to get that one hastily repaired rather than just putting an engine in, going out to practice. And then they were doing all sorts of things wrong, like on bump day. They had a car that were capable of 229 mile an hour, but they put a 227 mile an hour gearing in it. I mean, that's unforgivable. So they failed to qualify because the car wasn't geared correctly for the track. That's pathetic. And when you saw Alonso driving, it was scary watching him on board, the amount of work he was having to put in. It's one step away from having a serious accident. And to be honest, I'm kind of glad it didn't qualify because nobody...
the thing looked on edge, didn't it?
Yeah. No one can keep that on the track for 500
miles.
And
because it's oval racing, those walls are really close to you. You know,
well, he had a pretty spectacular shunt on the Wednesday, anyways.
And unfortunately, in IndyCar, there does seem to be quite a few fatalities. Because, I get that, I've watched a few IndyCar races this season, and, the racing, you could argue, is better than what's been happening in Formula One.
But without a doubt, it's fantastic.
The safety element of it is not so great. So David Day, this has happened. Alonso's, but Alonso seems to be sticking with McLaren. What have they got over him? Do you think? Do you think they're blackmailing him, or do you think he genuinely thinks they're the only team that can deliver? Because they didn't deliver for him in Formula One, for whatever reason, and now they don't seem to be delivering him for Indy 500. Is he right to stick by them, or do you think he's just giving out the right messages right now, but maybe in the future he'll move to a team that he believes that can provide him the platform?
It's a difficult question.
That's why I asked it.
If I have to be honest, there are some rumors, probably just those bad rumors that tend to spread, that maybe the problem is not that the McLaren is ruining Alonso performances, but that Alonso is ruining McLaren performances, because they tend to say that wherever he goes, in every team he goes, he has a very strong presence, he builds a leadership, and he shapes the team around his figure, and so what he wants from the car, and he brings also people with him to do so. But unfortunately, it seems that the way he wants his car to be, it's not then fast on the track. Those are rumors tend to circulate, especially in Italy. So, I don't know, you asked me why Alonso is sticking to McLaren. I can maybe turn the question and ask, why do you think McLaren keeps sticking with Alonso? But
he let him down, didn't he? They let him down, so...
It's
undeniably that Alonso has skill.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you could
sure.
argue
yeah,
that if he
yeah,
was
yeah,
in
yeah,
if
yeah.
he was in a Mercedes, the Hamilton had, that he would have won 4 or 5 world championships with that team.
After all,
just so happened that, unfortunately for him, when he left Ferrari, was a poor time to do it, because they seemed to up their game. I recently listened to another podcast, and it was Felipe Massa that was being interviewed in this podcast, and he was at one point teammates with Alonso, and he kind of insinuated that the reason he's working so closely with McLaren is that he has a tendency to annoy people, is that, you know, that he's potentially maybe burnt bridges in the Formula One paddock, and that's why he ended up without a drive elsewhere and still was at McLaren for those seasons where they weren't able to deliver. And maybe that's why here he's still with McLaren, because maybe he has a bit of a reputation.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was saying before. If we are, of course, talking about a world champion, and you don't just win an F1 world championship.
By being like everybody's mates, do you?
But at the same time... There are these rumors that because of his presence, his strong presence, he tends to create problems in the teams he drives for, and so this makes other teams not that willing to have him around, and so. Yeah, maybe there is some truth behind these rumors, but we have to see up to which point. My question for you guys is instead, why do you think McLaren is so interested in having an appearance in different disciplines in the motorsport? Why do they want to just not be in F1 anymore?
For me, I think IndyCar, because it's an American sport, will probably help their brand. Because F1's not as popular in the States as it is in Europe. Yeah. Paul, what do you think?
To sell road cars.
Yeah.
The brand, it's like you say, the brand's building. McLaren, it's only recently, isn't it? Like last 10 years or so, they started making supercars.
Yeah.
And America's a huge market. There's the constant rumours that they're going to come into the new top tier of World Endurance Championship when those regs come out in a couple of years' time. So, yeah, I think it's to sell motors, basically.
Well, they originally announced their first road car in 1993 because I was watching a season with McLaren, which I think I mentioned
yes,
to you.
Yes, you did need to watch that still.
Yeah, and in one of the episodes, they talk about McLaren making their first car.
That was the legendary F1, wasn't it?
It was, with the three seats at the front, but you were sat in the middle as the driver.
That's the one. Beautiful.
It's basically a millionaire killer. Lots of millionaires died in those things. But I think it's to help with their brand, Davide. I mean, fundamentally, I think. And
they're expanding, aren't they? They've got a technology arm now that does like the hybrid systems and
that
kind of stuff. They've got high-end tech that's not automotive. They've got the cars and everything. It's more than just what it was back in the day, which was essentially a racing team.
Yeah, they sell pieces to all kinds of different teams out there. If you follow them on social media, they talk about the bits that they do. But yeah, there's more to McLaren than just a Formula One team and a car manufacturer. There's a hell of a lot going on.
But they've got a massive customer program now, which brings most of their money in, selling the GT4 and GT3 spec cars all around the world. And that's, if you can penetrate the Asian and German market in those, happy days, that's going to quadruple the turnover of the business. So it's important for McLaren to be seen, I think, to be seen in the prestige markets. And to be fair, I think they'll get there, because a lot of people say, oh, well, they need to concentrate on Formula One first. But a business as large as that, the people that run the IndyCar have got no relationship to the people that run the Formula One. That have got nothing to do with the GT customer program. So they can absorb it within the organisation, definitely.
And I think, as long as they can absorb the costs, then
I'm sure they can with the projects they've got and selling various bits and bobs. So it's interesting to see. And I think maybe that's why Alonso, to go back to the original question, that's why Alonso wants to stick with McLaren, because they've got their finger in so many pies. It potentially, when they get themselves sorted out, opens up a lot of opportunities to do some really good things.
Yeah.
Maybe. True. Or I could just keep turning up and being embarrassed because they're a bunch of clowns, which is the case at the moment. Who knows? We'll see.
There is that too, isn't there? There's both sides of the coin. Right. So that's Alonso and Indy 500 discussed. Michelin. Right, done. Next, R Factor 2 roadmap update for May came out. We're now in June, so I don't know how that works out. there were some updates about the new UI. They're doing some competition stuff as well with McLaren Shadow again. And but the big news, I guess, Paul, is Le Mans 24 circuit.
Hey, what a barnstorming license agreement. Absolutely phenomenal. Le Mans has been added into R Factor 2 as a mod of varying degrees of quality over the years.
I've raced round one, I think. Yeah. Yes,
There's some very inaccurate ones. There's some old layouts. There's some that are absolutely swimming in bugs that make it very, very difficult to run any kind of serious organised
online. I ran in, I thought was okay.
I mean, there's a few. There's the 90s version.
Some of these mod tracks can be a bit flat, can't they?
Yeah. Well, I'm no expert in it, but I've heard a lot of talk about layout inaccuracies. But
can we be honest, Paul? You're not an expert in anything, are you?
This is true. I am jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. But it needs... R Factor 2, for me, is positioning itself as an endurance racing simulator. So it's got
the long distance stuff, LMP content.
Yeah, LMP, night and day, weather, driver swap, what, and all the good stuff that comes with it. And you need the big noises like Le Mans. You need it in an endurance sim because that's the crown jewel of long distance racing. And we've tried at Race Department, and I've raced in other leagues as well, that they've used mod versions of Le Mans. And they're swimming in issues from crash to desktops, strange holes in the circuit, frame rate issues, and to get a laser scanned, official first-party content on the level of quality that R Factor 2 is pumping out at the moment for circuits. Damn, that's amazing. And supposedly, it's not far away from being released either, so not something that we've got to wait in the long game for. Should be with us very, very, very soon indeed.
Well, I've touched on it before. I have, I used to be a huge Assetto Corsa racer. I have spent a lot of my time in the recent months in R Factor 2. Like any game, it does have its downfalls. But, you know, the content and the continued development of it is just brilliant. And it's really good to see. David A, are you a fan of Le Mans?
In general, or in the sim racing, from a sim racing perspective?
Both.
I'd say I am. I must admit that every year I promise myself that I'll watch the full race, and every year I fall asleep at some point because.
I'll be honest. I've been to Le Mans twice. I've never stayed up.
Scandal. Paul Glover,
I can't hack it. I'll be honest to you. I can't hack it. Kudos if you can.
I've managed 21 hours of watching it has been my record so far. So this year, I'm getting boys round. We're getting it up on the man cave. We're going to get the simulator on in the background, and we're going to do the full 24.
Nice.
I say that, it probably won't work out like it. When I'm asking the wife for bacon sandwiches.
No, because one of your mates will crash after 3 seconds, won't they?
Yep. So. Well, what I was saying to our lass, can I have some bacon sandwiches, please, at like 5:30 in the morning? Probably not going to wash down too well, that. So we'll see what happens. But good fun, though, Le Mans. It's an amazing experience. 24-hour racing is just, yeah, man, it's amazing.
Well, it is a great circuit because, because it's kind of the first section, the nice sweeping section, that's good. Then you've got the two large straights broken up by the chicanes. And excuse me, I don't know all the corner names and the straight names. I'm terrible with things like that. But what I like about Le Mans, you think that's kind of boring, but actually when you like drive like an LMP car and you get into the full speed, then it's to get that braking point right to keep as much momentum as possible through those chicane, through the first chicane, to then carry on for the straight down to the next heavy braking point. And then when you're around the back as well, I like that section around the back. I'll be honest, if you'd asked me this question, if I'd asked myself the question a year ago, do I like Le Mans, I would have turned and said no.
It looks on paper a very boring layout.
Yeah, but when you've actually raced it...
Yeah, it's very, very tricky. And to get the last few tenths... I mean, I thought that. I've only done one 24-hour Le Mans. And I kind of went into it thinking... I'd done it offline, just like driven it and stuff and raced on the AI and whatnot. And I kind of went into it thinking, well, there's the challenge of the amount of time that you're racing, absolutely. But the track holds nothing to worry about. And to lap it... is easy. To lap it at speed is ridiculously hard because every corner, if you're 3% away from the ultimate, then you've got like a 15,000 mile long straight that follows it, and you're going to be like just hemorrhaging tenths of a second every meter that you travel. Mm. So there's that. And like you say, the last section is there's no runoff area. You've had a long time doing very little on straight, so you kind of out of the mental zone for it. You make one mistake and you're off, and that's the end of your event. So for me, it's almost one of the most difficult tracks. I'd say it's harder than the Nordschleife. Not because it's got more corners, it's got less corners and the corners are easier, but it's keeping your head in the game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think you're right on the money there. It's because you're kind of a bit like motorway driving, isn't it? Where you can sometimes switch off.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit monotonous, easy for me to say. Monotonous because you're just doing one thing for a length of time, right? And you're right, it's switching.
There's no
your
margin.
Kind of brain back into place to say, right, you've got to get that breaking point right because you've got a corner coming up.
Yeah, and there's no margin for it to go wrong. Yeah. None whatsoever, either lap time or wall. You're off by a percent and you've got huge problems. So. Yeah. Fantastic venue, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that Jackie X nailed it when he said that Le Mans is an event made for the car rather than the driver, to test the car. So from a driver perspective, it might seem boring because, as you were saying, there are many, probably not that many corners and so on. But if you look at it from... testing the car limits point of view, it suddenly becomes very challenging, as we are saying, very, very interesting. It's meant to test the car, what it can do, and how far can it go without braking. And so you have to drive it with a different perspective in mind. It's not testing your abilities, your skills, what you can do, but what your car can do. So when you start driving and leaving it from this perspective, it becomes a full experience.
But I think you also throw 60 other cars onto a track. You do it for 24 hours and you have all the pressure of knowing that you've got to bring it home, but bring it on quickly. And that adds another dimension altogether. Le Mans for hot lapping and Le Mans for racing, two very distinct experiences.
Yeah.
And to be honest, there's no track that our factor could have announced that would have got me more excited than Le Mans. I were driving, I wasn't driving, obviously, because I was looking at my phone. I was in a car on the way to track at Paul Ricard when I got a Skype message off Marcel, Studio 397, saying, Le Mans announcement, here's the link. And I just, well, no, he sent me a link for roadmap. I had Chris Hay sat next to me. I'm like, oh, new R-Factor roadmap's out. And tongue in cheek, we went, oh, yeah, some more UI updates and everything. And then I opened it up and went, oh, a couple of swear words. He's like, what? Looked over my shoulder. We both just like swore loudly, went, wow, that's absolutely amazing. So, really, really, really good news and a massively strong license for our factor two, but really big.
I think it's good for them. I mean, they recently announced Nordschleife as well, didn't they? Was it towards the end of last year, early this year? I forget. And with a lot of news that's coming out at the moment in the sim racing world, and a lot of new games, you know, coming to the market, it's just kind of put a bit of spotlight on them.
Perfect timing, wasn't it?
Yeah, great timing from them. Yeah. And maybe they did. Maybe they knew what was coming and kind of stored it out ready to take a bit of the shine, because you tend to find that when someone else does something, someone else will come along and try and take a bit of the limelight with their own announcement, so to kind of spoil your party.
Yeah, exactly.
So to speak.
That's good business practice, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
All the eyes are on the ACC version 1 release the AMS 2.
Or the AMS 2 announcement, which we'll get on to. Yeah.
So it needs to just remind people that, hello, we're still here and doing good things.
Yeah.
And that is a very good thing indeed. So super happy.
Definitely. Right, so that's Le Mans in R-Factor 2, nicely covered. On to item number 4 this week. VW IDR sets a new record around the Nordschleifer.
Electric power.
Now, I know not everybody is a fan of electric cars. And on Race Department, Paul, you posted an article about it, and somebody commented in and brought Formula E into the discussion as you can understand that they would. There is a bit of a link there. And I held my hand up and said, actually, I've got to say, I started watching Formula E this season because it's on BBC in the UK and it's very accessible. And even if I don't watch the race live, I can go watch it back really easily. And got to say that I'm quite enjoying it. But not having the sound of the engine is a bit different. But anyway, that's all by the by. What is wrong with me? Put your teeth back in, Paul. technology is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And what these guys have achieved around this amazing legacy of a track is just brilliant. Now, they set the record yesterday, wasn't it? So on the 3rd of June, 2019. So if you listen to this in 10 years' time, hello. And they set a time of 6 minutes and 5 seconds and 336. I'm terrible with my times, but that's less than half a second there. So it's basically six minutes, 5.5 seconds. An unbelievable time. Now, I don't know if they have to do a lap and then have to come pull in and charge the thing up or replace the batteries. But, Paul, I mean, that is just an achievement, right? It's astonishing what they've achieved.
Like you say, technology is absolutely mind-blowing. The pace of that thing, the torque it's got, the way it picks up out of corners and eats straight up like they're going out of business. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's still 40 seconds away from the 919 Porsche Hybrid Special Edition car, ultimate lap record. But it smashed the previous electric one from some Chinese brand I'm not particularly familiar with. It's a phenomenal performance. And don't forget, this is the important thing, VW did not build this car to set the Nordschleife lap record. They built it for the Pikes Peak
Hill
Climb.
They changed the get-up, the wing, and everything else. Yeah.
So I dare say they could probably go faster if they'd built a car with the intention of racing in these kind of conditions. So that included, it's a phenomenal performance. But I strongly don't like electric racing. Not because it's electric, although that doesn't help. It's just I've not seen anything using electric power that piques my interest yet. But I've got to admit, respect to Romain Dumas for his driving ability, respect to V-Dub for making the car. And of course, you can drive it in Race Room as well. Race Room have got a very close technical tie-up with Volkswagen to bring that car into the sim. And they're constantly improving it and tweaking it as VW give them yet more data. So you can have a go for that yourselves and see what it's all about, which is an interesting drive, I must admit.
Yeah, I haven't had a go at doing that yet, but
really good actually. It's really different.
It's something that we kind of overlooked a few weeks ago when we did a previous podcast, and
nobody mentioned it though, did they?
No one.
Didn't get a single comment about that, or
no
me
one,
not writing
no one
an article.
Did. No,
on
no, you're yeah. right. No, you're right. So I thought when this record got set yesterday, I was like, it's a great opportunity to bring that into the conversation. So you got there before I did. But David Day, a few comments from you on this record. I mean, it's not quite Porsche 919 speeds, which set a 5 minute and just a 19 seconds and half a second there as well. But still an amazing technology's moved so fast. And I mean, we've seen in Formula E as well, the development of this battery power. I mean, they could come back in a year and it might even be faster still.
Yeah, sure. It's progressing at an astonishing rate the way these electric cars are evolving. And as I said in one of my articles, I love them because of what they represent. They are that when human beings focus on good things, they can achieve something extraordinary. And electric cars are just that, are an incredible piece of technology. And they're also faster, have a lot more torque than ICE engines. Their problem, their Achilles heel, it's right.
Yeah, yeah, it's, that's right.
It's as it has always been, the battery pack, how long it can last. But they are making good progress also on that front. So I'm confident that we're gonna have cars able to make 1,000 miles in not many years.
Yeah, I mean, kind of unrelated. You touched on the battery thing. I do remember reading an article back in 2018 about scientists that created these batteries that could be refueled at the pump. So you pump it, you'll take out the old battery cells and they're liquid, and you pump new fuel cells into the batteries, and that's how you charge them up, a bit like you're going and putting petrol into a combustion engine now. So you never know, technology, but you're right. I mean, one of the, you know, I don't know how they work. I don't know if they've got a battery being charged in the garage or whether they've got, they bring like 10 lots of packs, and then they, I would imagine the batteries are at the bottom, so they can literally lift the car a bit like a Tesla when they take the kind of chassis off. And then you've got the battery packs, you pull them out like on a tray, and then you put the next ones in. We don't know if we have those details on this car, but yeah, amazing, you know, just an amazing feat. Because as you say, Paul, the Nordschleife is a beast. It's a beast of a track, and we touched on before, it's one of those tracks, if you make the slightest mistake, not only is the car got to be amazing, but the driver's also got to be on it.
Oh, yeah. And Romain Dumas, I mean, he's been around forever. He's won pretty much everything that there is to win. He knows how to pedal a downforce prototype car. I think he's a double Le Mans winner. He's won things like the Daytona 24 and all sorts of different things. He's a really solid driver, so a good choice by VW. Although, ironically, he's got the second fastest lap behind the Porsche 919 that he used to race in the WEC. So that's a nice little link up with each other. But I'll be interested to see if they come back again with a version 2 next year or at some stage in the future or something designed specifically for this kind of thing. But what's interesting that's not strictly related to the actual lap itself is it's interesting in a world where we're trying to spend less money to see companies like Volkswagen building a one-off record attempt car. You don't see that very often now. This No. isn't going to race in anything. It's going to go up Pikes Peak. They've thrown it around a couple of other tracks as well. And that's all it's been built for. And that must have been a phenomenal amount of money that's actually not a lot of use to them because they don't race in anything
even
remotely similar.
They did it a few years ago with a Golf, didn't they?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, they did something spectacular with a Golf that was just a one-off car that they made. And they took pieces from like Porsche and Audi, all part of the VW, you know, the VAG kind of group. And made this Golf that was just unbelievably ridiculous just because they could.
I mean, that's cool. I love to see manufacturers doing things like that. These special edition one-offs and just fantastic, weird, crazy, wild things. And it's if electric racing does nothing other than provides a platform for people like Volkswagen to think it's worthwhile to invest in these special edition projects, then that's not a bad thing. Much as I dislike the electric racing scene, it's not a bad thing if that encourages people to do this, because we've been in a recession as an economy in the world pretty much for too long now, and people are closing down how much they spend and doing less and less and less rather than more and more and more. So I love to see these sort of crazy out there ideas. It's good stuff.
Yeah, so they called it the Golf GTI W12 is what it was called. And it was back in, do you know, it's 2007. Oh, my God, that's flown by. But it was a concept car. It had 641 brake horsepower with a twin-turbo W12.
Wow, that wow. sounds the kind. That sounds like the kind of thing that you see neon lights under parked in your local high street at 12 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it did have quite a hideous-looking body kit on it.
It didn't have a load of guys stood outside with their hands down the front of the pants and baseball caps on with really loud music, smoking cigarettes.
But it was one of those things they just wanted to show. And that's why they made the Bugatti Veyron as well, isn't it? Because they just want to, because they lose money on that.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's the building their brand as well, isn't it? Showing that, look what we can do. Special. And that's cool. I like
it. A bit like what McLaren attempted to do with the Indy 500.
But backfired quite spectacularly.
See the tedious link there? That's why I'm the host, you see? That's why I sit in this chair. Get out of my way. I'm coming through. So brilliant. I get that electric cars isn't everyone's thing. I do get it. I personally probably drive a car now more for convenience than I used to. And I think I touched it before, I do miss my petrol engine car that I had before. I got this diesel. Why I bought it, I do not know. But we all make mistakes. But if someone would turn around to me tomorrow and order me and said, I'll give you a Tesla, I would take one, because they pure, like, 0-60 speeds are ridiculous. And all I really do now is stop and start at traffic lights. So it'd be great fun. Right. Yeah, great. Stuff.
Oh,
right,
let me say that people say, we say that electric racing is not particularly fun or...
it is fun.
Yeah,
it lacks the kind of getting your juices
enjoyment
flowing, I think,
yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, but I think that once you have the cars going at the, let's say, right speed, having the right amount of energy to have longer races, and they will start race in proper venues, location, like, for example, Spa, Le Mans, and tracks like that, and you'll have a series where Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, maybe even Ferrari challenge one another with their electric vehicles, then everyone will watch those races. And
yeah, completely agree. I mean, Ferrari, we're not talking about, but Ferrari recently announced a new hybrid, you know, like they're getting in on the act. It's not quite electric, but it's a combination of the two, and it's something like 960 brake horsepower. I forget what model, what they call it.
The SF90.
There you go, right? And it looks and sounds unbelievable. So, you know, from a technological point of view, that's kind of ticks all the boxes, doesn't it? Because it's got, like, what appeals to Mr. Jeffrey and the older generation, though Mr. Jeffrey is probably about the same age as me. And also kind of appeals to the younger generation who are a bit more conscious, aware of the environment and other things like that. Because it, you know.
Basically, so, fully electric vehicles are just not yet ready, let's say. But once they will be, even in the motorsport, I think that will be a success, because after all, what makes a good race is when you have a battle between the drivers and their cars. The problem with electric vehicles is that right now they are fun, as you were saying, but not at the same level of course IC engines. But once the technology will be there and there will be action on track and on the right tracks, they will be amazing for sure.
I get your angle, but I think you're also a little bit wrong, because I know we're not supposed to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. But I've been watching Formula E, and I do think the tracks could be better, could be wider. But at Berlin, which is the previous race that happened in Formula E, there is a very wide corner. I think it's the first corner after the main straight. And it made for really good racing. The cars now last for 45 minutes plus one lap, which before they would have to change halfway through.
Yeah.
And the racing is actually very, very close. I would argue the tracks need to be a little bit wider, because there is a lot of contact. There is a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sometimes it seems a bit more like touring cars. But, you know, you've got guys that aren't giving each other room, and the next thing, the car's going into barrier, you know. And it is quite, it is actually, Monaco was probably the worst race, but then it's got, it follows the trend with Formula One, in my opinion. Monaco, I get it's glamorous, and the old question is, should it still be on the calendar? That's for another time. Maybe we could do that as a main topic one week. But yeah, to give Formula E its credit, it's getting better. It's attracting more and more audiences.
Yeah.
And it's getting there. And you've got the likes of Felipe Massa. You've got Wehrlein. You've got, what's his name? Race for McLaren. Van Dorn. He's in there, you know, and... It is getting better. And those naysayers out there, that's fine, you say it, but it's growing on me. I've got to say, I was one of those naysayers, and it's growing on me. I've got to put my hand up and say it's growing on me. But
I don't understand what you said there was wrong.
Yeah, but outside the cockpit, I get it. Like, outside the cockpit, from a viewer's spectacle, if it wasn't for the close racing... When you just see one car go past you, all you probably hear is a whine and a whoosh. You know, it doesn't really invoke the same kind of feelings as if it's a, you know, Formula One car of the old. I mean, the Formula One cars now are getting better, but they're not quite there, are they, in that kind of sound?
Paul, I understand that you say a car passes by and you're a whoosh. Yeah, but after all, the engines are becoming more and more silent. I mean, after all, even F1 cars or Indy cars, they have not those glorious sounds like in the race room.
Yeah, the 1990s F1, yeah.
I mean, those times are lost in a way, even for IC engines. So, I mean, all that fuss about sounds, even IC engines are not sounding good anymore. So,
you're right. But they're able to do more with it, aren't they? They're able to do things with the exhaust. I mean, you can buy like a car from VW now, and you can... You know, and you push a button and the sound of the note changes because it's routing the exhaust fumes differently and things like that. You can still, with a combustion engine, you can still manipulate things, can't you? And maybe add a chamber to add more of an echo or whatever to boost the sound. But a lot of people concentrate on the sound aspect. When you read the forums at Race Department, you know, when people start talking about, a lot of people immediately go to that. They go to the sound. But what they haven't done is they haven't experienced an electric car. And until you do, you don't understand. Because I can imagine driving one of those things is a thrill.
Exactly.
Because I've driven a Tesla, I drove one, and it blew my socks off.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. So I get what people are saying, but they're doing it from one, they're saying it from one perspective.
Yeah,
and they haven't experienced the other's perspective. Until they do, I don't know, you know. I get it, but I don't. Does that make sense, Paul? Help me out here. You're being very quiet, Paul. What's going on?
I, apart from to say I don't like it, I have nothing I can really add to this conversation. From where you're coming from and Davide's coming from, I understand that, but I don't care if the driving experience is good because I'm not driving it.
Yeah.
You want good racing,
though, right?
You want good racing, but it's also a census thing. I may have said this before, but it's worth repeating for any new listeners. My wife, I love motor racing, have done all my life. My wife's not interested. And when we first got together, back in the days before we were married, she used to pretend to be interested in stuff to secure my long-term love. And motor racing was one of those things. And we went to Silverstone years ago for the Formula Renault World Series, as it was called back then. And at the time, they used to have a couple of year-old Formula One car doing some demo laps and some donuts and all that good stuff. And it was Romain Grosjean at the time driving the demo car. And she's got no interest in motorsport, but the sight, the sound, the smell, the violence of a Formula One car ripping past you and the noise and the smell of the tyres and the fumes and the engine and all that good stuff shocked her and took her aback. And she went, wow, that's amazing. It's a assault on every possible visual and audio and smell and everything. That just doesn't happen with an electric car.
No, I get it. I do.
And that takes away. I mean, I've been to watch Formula E, I've been to the test day, I've been around the factory, I've watched it all on telly and everything, and it's just got none of the passion. It's very sanitised, it feels to me massively like a corporate marketing message series, and this is the vehicle in which they've picked to deliver said corporate message.
I would agree with you to a point. Last season, when I tried watching it,
yeah,
I thought I mean, like the attack mode. I know it sounds like a gimmick.
Oh god, you know it is a gimmick,
but it's brilliant.
No,
like it really adds to it. It's a bit.
But
like
the thing is, though, that's the fundamental issue of you shouldn't need an attack mode to add to the racing, because the racing. They had a perfect opportunity, Formula E, when they decided to create it and launch it. They had the perfect opportunity to look at the many thousands of things that are wrong with motorsport at the moment. Do them right, but powered by electric. And then if the product would have been phenomenally good, people would have said, oh, yep, yeah, actually, you know what? This is brilliant, because the racing's far superior to Formula One. The drivers are the heroes. Blah, 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 blah. But they created cars that look like Formula One cars, but slower. Put them on tracks where you can't overtake that are all Mickey Mouse. And then signed a bunch of drivers up that have never quite made it to the top tier in other things. And it's just, it's interesting. There's the occasional bit of good racing. There's a lot of bumping and boring and banging and smashing into barriers. But it just, yeah. It's either been better as a touring car series or gone full beans and made it, sent it to proper legendary circuits.
Yeah, I think the problem is the technology isn't quite there for it.
No,
yet.
No, and that's fine.
And also, I think what they were trying to do with the racing in the centre of towns is because it's environmentally friendly and it doesn't create the
which
noise.
Which again is a bit of codswallop. It's codswallop, though, isn't it? That, I mean, the cars going round for the 40 laps that they drive is relatively clean.
I tell you what, I could talk about this all day and argue with you.
Yeah.
This is a podcast itself, but I'm not saying that what you're saying is wrong.
You're saying it's not right,
but I think times are changing, and I think they're trying to adapt. What we're going to do is we're going to stop this here, because I think we're already on to nearly an hour.
We still got to talk
about Auto Ballista 2, which is coming up next. But you know, we could talk about this. I tell you what, let's make this the main topic for the next one, and let's talk about Formula E, electric racing in general, and let's come with your points that you think that it makes it rubbish, and I'll sit on that fence because I like sitting on it, and Davide, you can say whatever you want. And because I get both sides of the coin. I'm just trying to be play both sides, really, I think, which sounds wrong. Anyway, that's my dirty mind kicking in again. Right,
moving swiftly on.
Moving swiftly on. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, yes. I'm Paul Glover. I've got a dirty mind.
Right. Okay. So this week's big news is Auto Ballista 2 is coming.
What's that? I don't heard anything about boom, boom. That.
I need a drum roll, don't I?
Yeah, we need some sound effects.
Sound effects.
Yeah, need something like a fanfare.
you could have Joe breathing uncomfortably. that's always a good sound effect.
No, you're okay. I mean, I don't know anybody else, but did anybody else see this coming?
Fantastic news.
Did you see it coming?
AMS2 or Madness?
Well, both, really.
Well, AMS2 has been a noise around that for a couple of years since the crowdfunding.
Yeah, but I kind of thought it was never going to happen, you know?
Oh, no, just in reason we trust. No, they were always going to do it. It's just a matter of when.
So you touched on it there, the engine choice for them. I think it's split people down the middle, hasn't it?
Oh, you could say that again. A very very surprising. I think a lot of people had their money, myself included, on G-Motor 2 as the baseline and potentially a secondary graphics engine bolted on top of it. So I don't think anybody saw Madness coming. And actually, the more I think about it, I spoke to Renato quite a bit about it from Riser. it makes really good sense because, yes, like it or hate it, Project Cars 2 had some good and some bad points, but Ryzen know how to polish and how to put value into something.
I wonder where you were going with that polish.
I know. I also thought maybe should change.
If you're British, you'll get that. If you're not, sorry, we're not explaining it.
I'm not going down that route.
I wonder where you were.
But Ryzen know how to get the absolute maximum from things that they do. And there's potentially a really good game engine hidden behind Project Cars 2.
Yeah.
And I think the be-all and end-all is, if Ryzen can't do it, no one can. And I think this is me being a little bit cynical, but also I think I'm being fair in saying it. It's an absolute masterstroke from Slightly Mad Studios. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Again, I am not inferring this is my opinion, nor am I casting any kind of questions over the software itself, but Project Cars and Project Cars 2 seems to have a very large following of unhappy people who don't like it for various different reasons. And that seems to have rubbed off on Slightly Mad Studios. So they just seem to be in a difficult position that anything they release, people generally jump straight on the hate wagon with it.
Yeah.
And the flip side is, Ryzen Studios can do no wrong. Everything they do is loved, rightfully so, by the way, by the community. So what I think Slightly Mad have done, and it's a masterstroke, they've given Ryzer access to their game engine. They're basking in some of the goodwill that is rubbing off from the Ryzer connection. Ryzer are fixing all the things that are wrong with Madness and Project Cars 2. And I would assume, and I don't know this for a fact, I would assume that SMS are then going to benefit from that learning and benefit from that polish with their next project. So what a fantastic deal for all concerned. Ryzer have got a powerful modern engine and a lot of resource behind them for support. And SMS have got all the good community will that Ryzer have garnered over the years and potentially learn a heck of a lot of important lessons that they seem incapable of learning on their own based on the first two releases. So, wow, everybody wins and the community is the ultimate winner because AMS2 sounds like it's got potential to be mega, and if that has any positive impact on Project Cars 3, that's no bad thing as well. So, happy days for all concerned. A damn good, clever move.
Yeah, Davide, what are your thoughts?
I must say that a month ago, I was watching one of, I don't know if you, I think you know, the YouTube channel from Bozzi, the one that films cars in their engines, their sounds.
Right, yeah.
I think you maybe know the guy. And he was filming at Imola for basically there was an event to remember Ayrton Senna. And they were recording a Lotus 98T, the one that Senna drove. And in the YouTube video description, he said, thanks to Reza for their help with sound recording. And when I read that, I said, what? What? Lotus 98T, thanks Reza? What? And I started thinking, and so when you were asking, were you expecting this? When I read that, I started thinking maybe something is coming. And in fact, in the latest, in the second part of Paul's interview with Renato, there is the video footage from the Lotus 98T that Reza is making.
Yeah.
So I was, I wouldn't say expecting it, but that made me think that something was coming. And I think that they made the best choice for engine-wise, because if you look right now, the options are the G-Motor 2 engine, which works okay, but I'm not so sure that it ticks all the boxes that the Razer themselves set when they did the... talked about.
They've had a bit I'm sure they've had a bit of experience with it, with doing their recent cars for R-Factor 2. So
yeah, and basically they said they said it themselves. Renato said that when they decided to make some cars for R-Factor 2, they had G-Motor 2 license in mind to see what it could do. And it's surely a great engine, but I have to say, graphics-wise, it looks a bit off compared to
other...
It looks
a bit outdated now,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Then the other choices are Unity, which is no good for racing games, or the Unreal Engine 4, which is proving problematic, a very problematic engine for racing sims. So
well, diplomatically put, well done.
Yeah. So the Madness engine, I think it's the absolutely the best choice because it's an engine made for racing games and simulations. So they picked the best choice.
I think they definitely picked the best looking choice. I mean, graphically, I mean, what Project Cars 2 offers looks stunning. I mean, some of the pictures that people post, you know, you have to sit there for a second and go, is that real or is it not real?
Yeah.
Like, you have to really squint and you really have to look at the detail because a lot of people, I reckon, if you quickly showed them a screenshot of Project Cars 2, they wouldn't be able to tell you the difference between real and not real.
I think that the only real problem with the Madness engine is on the sound department. The sounds in that engine are awful. I really don't like them. They all sound very like if they were processed or digitally made. So I think that maybe that is the weakest point in the engine, but I am sure that Razer, with the help of SMS, will be able to work their way through that. As for physics, the Project Cars franchise has been quite criticized for physics, even though Project Cars 2 was definitely a step forward. I think that the real problem with their physics, it's not that the engine is not capable of delivering 100% full-on sim racing experience, but the fact that they were trying to make a title that was sorry for the stuttering that was
I do it all the time, mate. Don't worry about it. I don't apologize. I just have to put up with it.
They were trying to make a title that could work for different audiences,
Are you trying to say that the game has inconsistencies?
I think
I think we touched on it before, haven't we? I mean, you see videos online where people drive like a car, and it just feels like the car is disconnected from the track.
Yeah, I think that. I think that the Madness engine can do great things also on the physics side. It's a great engine also for physics. The problem is that we didn't see this because SMS, when they made the two Project Cars games, they were trying to cater to a different audience. They have a different objective in mind, and I totally understand and respect that. And I think that the Project Cars franchise has to be seen from a specific perspective, and from that perspective,
I mean, it's achieved great things. I mean, it's achieved great sales. It's done what it set out to do.
Especially
in the console market, right?
Yeah, basically, Project Cars can do a lot of things that many other sim racing games don't offer. The problem is that trying to do too much has damaged some sides of it, like, for example, the physics. But I don't think that it will be a problem for AMS2. As I said, I think that the only real problem with that engine is the audio department. To me, I believe.
But surely
that
could be fixed by just using different audio files.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well,
maybe.
It wouldn't be the engine as such, would it? Because surely you record sounds and you put them in the game. Do you not?
Yeah, but maybe also.
Maybe I'm simplifying it. Paul, do you
know? Well, I think, the engine uses FMOD, which is the same as Assetto Corsa 1 and Assetto Corsa Competizione. So
right. It's
not tied into the engine.
Yeah,
and
I think
something
so.
We need to clarify is it is the Madness engine. The Madness engine is what Project Cars 1 and 2 used. It's not Project Cars.
Yeah, no.
So that's like saying I've seen some comments about it. It's like saying the Unreal 4 engine created shooting games. I can't name any because I don't follow that genre. But created shooting games, racing games.
I had one in my mind and it just went.
Yep, so it's not linked to Project Cars in any way.
No, indeed, exactly.
So what Project Cars don't do, so the inconsistency, let's say, that's not something we need to worry ourselves.
No, indeed, exactly. And I don't know why, like, you're right. I mean, that's the thing why I'm touching on it is because people are judging Auto Ballista 2 on a different game. Okay,
yeah,
use the same engine.
It's got nothing to do with it. Nothing to
do
with it whatsoever. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I like certain games like the G-Mode is a bad example, but I really have a lot of faith in Riser Studios. They create heavy-duty simulations. I think Project Cars, although they advertise themselves as a hardcore sim, I don't think they ever intended to be in that space whatsoever. And that's why a lot of people are disgruntled, because they expected R-Factor 2.5 and didn't get that. I think Riser have no intention of creating a less simulation experience than AMS-1 offers. I think they intend to create more sim than they do at the moment. And they obviously are smart people, and they see what the Madness engine can deliver and are confident that they can deliver an even more realistic experience than they could with the first game. So people saying, oh, I hate the term Simcade, but it gets thrown around a lot. Oh, it's going to be Simcade because it's using Madness and Madness was a console game, blah, 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 blah. No, that really has no bearing on it. I think the graphics are beautiful, but Riser have already said they want to put their own stamp on the graphics. So for me, and I think it was one of the interview questions someone submitted, it feels like, and I agree with them, P-Cars 1 and 2 were a little bit too bling. So they're really, really good, but it's almost overdoing a few of the aspects to give an impressive visual experience. It looks almost better than real life does.
Yeah, so I mean.
So I think that'll get toned down to follow the design palette that Riser have employed with their previous games. So it'll almost go a little bit, bland's the wrong word, but I feel it's going to look more true to life visually. I think the audio FMOD can do amazing things, and Riser have really gone quite, they've done a damn good job in the old engine for AMS-1. So I'm not worried about the audio. I think that'll be markably better than we've seen in the Project Cars franchise. And the physics, they are absolute masters at physics and force feedback. Renato and other people from Riser I've spoken to wax lyrical about what the Setter tyre model can deliver. So I think a lot of fine-tuning will go into that one, because I think Project Cars didn't need to go into masses of detail, even though they've got the ability to do so, because that's not the marketplace they were looking at. Riser are looking at the marketplace. Riser are going into a place where people hold great store in quality force feedback and true-to-life physics, and that's entirely what their company's about. So to not do that would be bonkers, and I don't think they will do that. I think they will go for a really good sim, so I'm not worried at all at this stage.
Well, I'm pleased because they chose Madness Engine because it's going to support VR.
Yeah, exactly. Natively as well, which is great. And they're going to look at the other headsets that are not the standard HTC and Oculus Rift. So that's going to come out of the box. Triple screen support out of the box.
Yeah.
All the bells and whistles that Madness comes with will be delivered, and a few extra bits as well that aren't in the engine at the moment. So should be a damn good VR experience.
And it's set to release at the end of this year as well, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
So obviously you've been working on this for a little while under the radar.
It's been working on for a while under the radar. They're quite heavily forward in a lot of the stuff. So there's a lot of cars and tracks working in game.
Do you know if this is going to be a version 1 release, or is it going to be like an early Steam access jobby?
Don't think that's 100% set in stone yet.
Right.
Potentially it might be a little bit early for the backers. not a full version one release.
Yeah, but it's backed it. So
it's going to be a riser thing. But what they tend to do is they'll release version one, but they'll develop it for another three. I think it's a 3-year plan.
Right.
So you'll get V1, but it'll grow like AMS. Yeah. It's not a finished. It's not
going to come out
on the left.
How long did they develop AMS 1 for?
Well, seemingly for like 2 decades.
Right.
it's been out since the GameStop car days. Bit of a special case because they did the crowdfunding and they kept adding value. One thing Reza, a terrible app, is charging people for stuff. They seem to give everything away and keep adding more and more stuff for free.
Yeah, you've mentioned this before.
It's amusing. It's good for us as an end user. But they say it's a 3-year plan. I wouldn't be surprised if that goes on even longer, to be honest with you. So it's not going to be released, patched 3 times, and then never touched ever again. I think you'll find that this, as they learn more, especially because it's a new engine. I mean, they've been working with the ISI G-Motor engine for years with AMS-1, and they were still adding things in like turbo modelling and diesel smoke for the trucks. Right to the very death, they were still learning new stuff. Well, this is a brand new one, so you'll get everything that you get in PCars 2 plus some more on top of it. And then they'll continue maxing the engine out, I think, for the foreseeable future. And stuff that's not even on the radar now will be brought in into the title as time goes by, I'm categorically certain.
Yeah, I'm just reading the you did an interview with some of your questions, and then you went back and did part two with some readers' questions on the site, and his answer for regarding the release was basically what you just said. It's we might release it when it's up to beta standard. They suggest they've got 20 developers and about 100 testers. If they want 101 testers, they know where to come.
Yep, same here. Make that 102. I'll
get
some of that. Give it a
talk and drive. Thousands and thousands of users. So, it's got potential to be amazing. They've given some hints at the content, but we don't really know much about that right now, do we?
Well, we know that it's going to be, Renato quotes, 75%. Of AMS-1 content will go to it. So the reason 75% is some of the older content's not... It's too far away from the standards needed for Madness Engine, graphically. So it's not worth bringing on. And there's some licensing issues too.
Yeah, I was going to say licenses, obviously...
Well, interestingly, on licenses, he's already said that some of the stuff they've got, I'll cite the... super trucks, you know, the trucks that do the jumps over the jumps and everything. That's fantasy at the moment. So it's based on real world, but it's not real world. Things like that, they're looking to secure the real world license for. So still bringing it over, but as licensed content and all the improvements that come with it.
Some people happy on the forums.
I'm looking at you, felt hat. You'll be excited about
that. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking of. Because he'll be like Christmas has come early. Because he loves it. He bangs on about how we don't cover it and how... You know, it's amazing. But the thing is, it's on at ridiculous times. There's enough motorsport to cover as it is.
I struggle to
watch World Rally, Formula E, Formula One, British Touring Cars, MotoGP. If you haven't watched the MotoGP this weekend, don't bother with MotoGP and Moto3. Watch the Moto2 race. It was unbelievable.
We need 50 writers, dude. We need 50 people to cover all the cool stuff that's going on.
So much stuff. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Then we're chucking other sport, Paul, because it does exist.
No, it doesn't.
Even though you...
No, if it's not got an engine, it's no such thing. So I'm not...
Listen,
don't lower yourself to talking about other sports here, Paul.
Listen to my voice. Other sports do exist.
Lies. Fake news.
fake news. I'll give you fake news and I'll see you next. I'm going to shove that fake news and it won't be pleasant.
Going back to the content, 75% are AMS-1.
That's great.
We know they've got the Ayrton Senna license, so we've seen the 88 and 91 McLaren already. It's pretty much alluded to the fact that the 84
there's
going to
be LMP, because there's a picture of that as well. You know,
So we think we've heard...
I mean, the endurance stuff hopefully will be amazing, because I've really got into that as well.
Oh, endurance is fantastic. And Brazil have got an endurance series that have got a lot of the usual GT3, GTE cars. They've got the Metal Morrow prototypes that are already in sim, plus a couple of LMP2 cars in there as well. So I would not be surprised if that's included, because they're keeping it, obviously, Brazil-centric at its core, but they said they're going to expand massively the worldwide reach as well. So I think we're going to get the generic Formula cars from the different eras. I'm sure of that.
And we're going to get Rally X, apparently.
Yeah. So there'll be there's going to be a ton of stuff. But rightfully, I think Renato wants to keep his powder dry because he needs stuff to announce between now and December.
Obviously. Yeah.
But,
yeah, but Renato, if you're listening to this, send us a beta test key, please. Thanks.
Yeah, nice, wouldn't it?
It would be, because, it's got Brands Hatch. What more? I'm happy. It's got Brands Hatch. I love Brands Hatch. I love it as a circuit. Davide, Paul and I have been completely taking over this conversation about AMS. Anything that stands out for you that you're particularly excited about for Auto Ballista 2?
Well, from the trailer, I've seen the BMW M1 Pro car, so that... It's something that I want to drive as soon as possible. And track-wise, they said that they are bringing Donington to Automobilista 1 this summer, and I believe that it should be coming to AMS 2 also.
Oh,
so
that'd be good.
I think, I don't believe that they acquired the license only for their old games. And sure...
it's definitely for both. For both. Donington and Snetterton.
Yeah, so the M1 Pro Car on Donington is the the highlight for me. I'm a level 5 baker or baker? How do you say? No, baker is the one that makes cookies,
Baker.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
baker.
If you want to bake some cookies and send them my way, I wouldn't say no. But if you're a beta tester, are you?
Yeah, I should get a key as soon as they start sending them. So, okay.
Davide, quick question for you, because I backed them as well, and I cannot remember what level I'm at. How do you find out?
Because I checked my email and I searched.
Oh, we'll have that discussion offline, Paul.
Useful listening for other people.
It could be. Where did you back it? Or was it Kickstarter, or was it another site?
Indiegogo.
Indiegogo. You just log on to your Indiegogo account.
Oh, cool. Okay. There
you go,
people.
And you should be able to look at your history.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that.
I must have missed that boat. When was that?
Oh, God, about 3 years ago, Davide.
I wasn't really on the sim racing scene then. I was kind of like lurking.
One of these ones where, talking about Reza don't charge for anything, they were looking for some extra funding to push GameStop Car Extreme final development before they wrapped it. So they sort of said, do us a bit of backing, depending on your level, and the levels were not stupid money, and we'll give you like free DLC for the life for AMS1. Or we'll give you free DLC and the next game that we create, or free DLC, the next game, and the DLC for that. So basically, I backed that a while ago just because I wanted to back it because I like Riser. And you don't pay for anything from that point onwards. And even they gave the chuffing R-Factor 2 DLC away as an extra bonus.
Yeah.
Amazing company. Really, wow. Money, yeah. Value for money. I mean, they didn't even finish GameStop Car Extreme. They decided to repackage the whole thing as a new game, put shed loads of stuff extra into it, and just lift it. We'll turn it into Automobilista and lift it to another level again. Wow. Just wow.
Love the fact the estimated shipping date was 2015.
Oh, for the follow-on game.
Well, I'd imagine that's... Yeah.
Well, it was called Riser 2015 at the time, but I think they grew Automobilista 1 so large... It was pointless to stop developing it because there's carryover learning, and they just turned it into a much, much more substantial and finished product.
Well, probably knowing you, Mr. Moneybags, you went for level 12, didn't you, at $2,000?
I wish I were Mr. Moneybags, because one, you got a ticket to Interlagos to be entertained by Riser and watch the...
And you got a T-shirt, and you got a poster of Emerson Fittipaldi.
Yeah, the T-shirt and poster.
Signed by the legendary man himself.
Oh, that'd have been cool. That would have been cool. The T-shirt, I'm not interested in. But the poster would have been cool.
Yeah, it's not flowery. Well, they could have made just a flowery one.
If they got some paisley on it, I'd have been all over it. But
there's lots to get. Like the weather system, the lighting, day and night. There's a lot to be excited about here, isn't there?
Yeah, this would be a
great... Going to tick a lot of boxes.
Yeah, it would be a great title.
Does it snow? Does it snow a lot in Brazil?
No, but I do believe that Project Cars 2 has snow.
Really, every time I put variable weather on, every third race has snow. Why? That's just one of the stupid things I really dislike about the game. That is the most pointless thing I've ever seen. Snow. Snow at bloody Dubai. Come on. Anyway, moving on.
Guys, I mean, like, when you, like, you know, David A touched on the trailer. I mean, you know, like, racing Formula cars there, you know, in on the wet. I mean, it's just going to be a potential, just amazing. It's got huge potential, and everybody should rightly so be excited about it. And what you said, Paul, about the engine stuff is completely right. You know, don't base this game on Project Cars 2 and its handling, because as David A picked up on, you know, there are some inconsistencies in the cars and the way they handle and so forth. So you know that the engine can cope with it because it could be coded to do it. It's just that whoever's coded one car and coded the next car is just not such a good job. But we know Razor, yeah, that's where they excel.
That's their modus operandi, is exactly to have a consistent experience throughout. So yeah, totally agree. It's, I think somebody described it, forgive me for not describing it exactly word for word right, but if a painter paints a picture using a certain amount of oil, certain oils in certain colours, and you hate it, the next painter to use the same oils and colours doesn't mean you're going to hate their product. It'll be something completely different, even though the ingredients are identical. And this is the best way I've ever seen
going
anybody
back,
describe
going
that.
Back to being a baker here, aren't we? As David A said, you know, if you're a baker, you bake one cake with the same ingredients, somebody could do it a lot better with the same ingredients next to you.
Exactly. And that's the thing, and that's the takeaway that people keep coming back to, that's a bit frustrating, I think. The same rhetoric is, it's Madness Engine, but that's all. There is, because, oh, do you think they'll use the assets from Project Cars? No, it's not the same
licensing
product.
Come
it's got
on,
nothing
people
to do with anything. It's not going to copy and paste their car into their SMS's car into their sim, because it's nothing to do with it.
Some people do get very angry on the internet.
Really? Yeah, I thought everybody was quite reasonable and fair and calm, so I'm surprised by that. This shocks me somewhat. but it's true. It's bizarre, but it's going to be, I think, the best thing we can do is get excited and see what happens.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, you know, and we should all be very excited, listeners. I think David A's got a question.
Yeah, guys, what you are most excited to drive first in AMS2?
Oh, you go first, Paul.
Trucks. I like big rigs.
Oh, in VR would be amazing.
Won't it just? Trucks, their Formula Truck series is one of my favourite sim racing experiences, bar none. That's going to be mega. It's got the proper trucks, the proper tracks. Boom. All the rules, all the regs, sexy graphics. Nice. Can't lose. Fantastic.
What about you, Paul? Going to say go-karts.
Ooh, controversial. Oh.
They are also very good in Automobilista.
I've done a bit of practice with them in Automobilista, and I was actually quite impressed because I am a VR snob. So the fact that you can do go karts in VR, I think, would be quite interesting because I had a go with the original Project Cars in it, and it did make me feel for one of the very rare times, made me feel a little bit queasy. But the handling, just wasn't quite there for me. And I like the handling auto ballista of the go-kart. So combining that with VR, I think it's got huge potential.
Yeah. Well, nice thing to... a little bit of a story from me. Just to say to people that maybe have never tried a Razor product to make them understand how good they are. I personally have never driven in real life a kart. But I've driven a lot of carts in AMS. Mm-hmm. And thanks to having driven carts in AMS, I've been able to speak with carts drivers in real life and basically understand what they were saying to me about how their cart handled. And say myself what I was expecting a kart experience to be. And they thought that I was a kart driver too. Basically, the physics in AMS is so right that you drive what it's an almost exact replica of a kart in it. So they do a great job with physics. They are one of the best, if the best around.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good little story. That I like that. They thought you were a proper Carter. Love that.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. They thought that I had experience too in real karts, and instead was just in sim racing in AMS, and it's great, and it makes you feel good too, because I mean, for example, I will never be able to drive, let's say, the Formula 12, a 1995 F1 car in real life. But yeah. If I know that their physics is so right and so close to the real thing, and I get experience in the sim version of the car, I think that I get a close experience to what it could be in real life too. So it's great, I think.
Yeah. No, I, you know, I mean, I know that it's not going to be 100% the same, because you don't have quite the G-force and sensation, but, you know, the handling aspect.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Completely makes sense. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you know,
I think that's three in the virtual studio that are looking forward to this bad boy. I just missed the boat when it comes to the backing. Otherwise I would have backed, but, hey ho. Oh, well, I'd have to, see if we can pull some strings and get a code, because I really, really want one, because I'm genuinely excited about this game. Because I never really played the first one. I played it a little bit and I've been impressed. So
it's one of those that the deeper you dig into it, the more amazing it becomes.
Yeah, well, especially the fact that, you know, I don't know how many of their testers have got VR. I've got VR. Come on, give it to me.
And you know, actually, that's the really good thing about it being madness. There's not much testing needs doing in terms of VR, because that's already...
I think that's rubbish, Paul. Lots of testing required. You've got to make sure those views are looking good.
Actually, talking about VR, the AA in Project Cars 2 has come in for a little bit of criticism. And that was one of the questions that we asked in the interview, when Riser have already started to investigate it, and they're going to look to improve it in Autumn Blister 2. So it should be an even better experience visual-wise than Project Cars 2 was. So that's nice news. So it just shows you that some of the things that you seem to consider to be standard fare in the current engine, everything's on the table in terms of being looked at, improved, tweaked and changed, which is awesome.
Console, I mean, they haven't said no, have they? And we know that Madness's engine is, you know, Project Cars 2 were on PC... And console, I completely get their main focus is PC, but it's dangling there, isn't it? A little bit, like the appetite.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. That's got to be some of the reasoning behind.
It's got to be.
The engine choice.
If it goes so well for them on PC,
yeah,
then if they surely make they've got to make the jump.
If they want to make money, and they want the only way you can make serious money with a racing game is release it on console. The PC market's just not big enough. Simple as.
Yeah.
If they've got the know-how of SMS behind them in terms of knowing how to convert that game into a console-ready release, and they're on an engine that already can do that and has proven to do it, I think they'd be bonkers not to. And I would imagine they probably will do that at some stage in the future.
We're probably talking, what, 2-3 years down the line?
I would say so. I don't think it's in there. I mean, this is all my opinion.
By that time, you might be next-gen consoles. That's the problem, isn't it?
Potentially.
I guess.
It's not off the table. The easiest way to look at it, I think, is it's not off the table, but it's not a driving force either.
Yeah.
I think they are PC guys.
Yeah,
they realise that's where their market is the niche within the niche of super hardcore, obscure content, sim racing. But if it's not,
I mean, we've only 20 developers, you don't want to spread yourself too thinly, do you?
And it depends what the technical tie-up is with SMS. I mean, I know there's a profit share thing going on there, so it might be that SMS and this is all my opinion, this is not fact, it might be that SMS crunch some numbers and say, well, actually, if we pay to port it to console, the return in the percentage of profits that we get back will be greater than the cost for doing it.
Yeah.
So happy days for all concerned. Who knows? It's options are open, and I think Riser have enough integrity that if they did bring it to console, it wouldn't impact in a bad way the PC version. So I know some criticism has been levelled at other developers that have done cross-release, that there's fear that the impact on the PC version is going to be dumbed down because of the processing power of the console. I don't think
Ryza would, I don't think that would have any wash with them. I think if that was going to be the case, they wouldn't do it. Or if they did do it, they'd do it in such a way that the PC is the lead platform and the experience that they're trying to deliver.
You have to consider also that the new consoles from Sony and Microsoft are about to be announced and presented. Yeah. And they have...
E3's coming up soon, isn't it?
Yeah. So and they Vegas. They both have very nice new specifics. So by the time AMS 2 will come out, and maybe they will be interested in going over to consoles, the new ones will surely have no limit, or will pose no limit to their engine. So
yeah, exactly,
won't be a problem.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's good to know that the option is there. I think.
I hope they do it from a commercial point of view. That'll bring some money in. And I get the impression that a lot of the sim racing developers, or certainly the people at Ryza's kind of level, they're not turning themselves into millionaires. They're earning a crust. They're getting a wage. It's probably a decent wage at that. But I don't think Ryza, looking at the numbers that have bought the game and that are playing it and the cut charges and structure they've got, no one's going to be sat there on 150 grand a year. You know what I mean? So for them, they deserve the rewards that come with it. So I hope they do, and I hope it's a financial success.
I love the fact they turned around and said, no, it's not a no, and that we need to review it in the future. But, you know, I would imagine that's going to be 2, maybe 3, maybe even longer than that down the line. And like, you know, Davide says, and I mentioned it before, they're about to announce the next gen, which basically means that the thing underneath my TV in my living room is going to become a brick soon. So,
coming to a CEX near you for 100 quid. Yeah.
Right. That's everything this week. We've, that's been over an hour and a half this week. So that's, filling your ears with our voices for that long. So,
congratulations for sticking with us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us. So, guys, don't forget racedepartment.com, where our forums are. Go and join a discussion, be it about all the topics we discussed today. And also, if you want to talk about the SRO Esports, which we're involved with as well, we recently had the event at Paul Ricard, just gone, that Paul's just got back from there. Club races occur during the week, Monday to Sunday. So take a look, sign up, premium membership required, etc. Paul, you got any content videos coming out on YouTube, Twitch this week? I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, at the moment, I've taken the strategy of, rather than scheduling stuff, I will be creating stuff, but I'm going to do it as and when time and fancy takes me. Okay. So I've not got a plan as such. I mean, recently I knocked out the Formula E and Zandvoort video for R-Factor 2.
Yes, you did, yes.
Just because I'd not covered them yet and I fancied doing them, fancied a bit of time in RF2. Thoroughly enjoyed both of them. So, the short answer is no, there's no schedule as such. They will be published as and when they're published, and I'll put an article up on RD to draw your attention to it. But of course, if you're subscribed, ladies and gentlemen, then you'll get a notification when we go live with any videos. So do please subscribe to us and click the little bell button that tells you when things are happening.
And the next round of the SRO is where, Paul?
Oh, it's beautiful Spa-Francorchamps. So end of July is our next one. We've just done Paul Ricard. Fantastic Paul Ricard. And seriously, I had a preconceived idea there was going to be a boring Formula One grade track in the middle of nowhere. And... Turndot, I mean, it's in the most beautiful part of France I've ever seen. Phenomenally attractive. Little quaint villages all around it. Big, twisting mountain roads up to the track. And the circuit's just... It's a gorgeous venue. There's a rooftop party with dancers and music on, overlooking the cars going past with the lights on. So the whole place is amazing. And the eSport event was great. Version 1 had just come out for ACC. We had a couple of technical hitches. But they were not software-related. One of them was a human error setting a load time between practice and qualifying too high. And the other one was the lady in the kiosk behind us decided to unplug six of our rigs.
Did you plug it in a Hoover?
Yeah, it really was. Because it happened to have been, and I'm not being unfair to say it, it wasn't a particularly exciting race, that particular one. Right. And then we'd got halfway through thinking, oh, thank God, and then the bloody power went off. So I no, I am not doing that again. This is not fun. So, yeah, that were disappointing. But and Paul Ricard has a distinct lack of chairs, which is curious.
Yeah, I saw that in Chris Hayes' video the other day. Yeah. So
check that out, actually, guys.
Your fellow commentator for the event.
Yeah, there's nowhere to sit, and we found a settee and thought, yes, got a settee, and then literally halfway through the day, it disappeared. How does where does a settee go halfway through a day? For the love of all that is good.
So are you going to take a fold-away chair with you next time?
Well, it's a 24-hour race, so I'm taking a fold-away bed. But I think next time we're on a roof of a pit building at the bottom of Eau Rouge, so should be some spectacular
that'd
views to be had there. Yeah, looking forward to that.
That'd be good. And with Spa, you don't know what kind of weather you're going to get either, do you?
Exactly. Last year, I think, it was glorious, from what I'm told, and the year prior, it was raining and cold, so yeah. It could be a bit of a mixed bag.
Its own climate where it is. So,
which will make for good on-track action.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, drove past it on the way to Sim Racing Expo last year. So
yes, of course, and of course the race after that one is at the same time as the Expo. So there'll be the Expo going off, and then in the little sunken amphitheatre hall in the middle, we'll be doing the final.
Oh,
round.
Oh, you're doing it in there?
The
was that where they were doing
the slot car things?
Yeah.
So that should be really cool because they've got the grandstands all around it. People
sweet.
Looking down
on
the venue.
Be really good. Yeah,
looking forward to that one. That's going to be good.
That will be really good. And you're going to obviously have the other esports going on in the main hall as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll be there covering the expo as well. So,
are you going to find the time, Paul?
By not eating, drinking or sleeping.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, guys, we're on the usual socials, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Search for Race Department. I don't suppose you've got anything you want to promote, David. Have you got any articles coming up?
I'm working on a couple of things, but...
You're keeping it close to your chest.
Yeah, it would be a surprise.
In all honesty, do check out David Day's little articles. They don't come out very often, but when they do, they are an interesting read. So
I
do recommend you go and check them out at
racedepartment.com.
I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank David Day for joining me once again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for turning up. Paul, Jeffrey, thanks for coming, mate.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Really enjoyed it as always. And thanks, everybody, for... putting up with us for an hour and 40 minutes of your lives. You'll never get back.
Yeah. Apologies, guys. But some people moan that it's not long enough, and some people moan it's just too long.
You can't put a time limit on quality, my friend.
Thank you very much for listening. This has been episode 8 of the Race Department podcast. I've been Paul Glover. Cheerio.